Welcome to the EcoNews Report. I'm your host, Kirk Cahoon.
And I'm David Narum
of Greenway Partners. And joining us on the phone today is Ben Skirfield of Skirfield Solar. Welcome, Ben.
Welcome. Thank you.
Ben, I'd like to start off with a kind of general question before we get into some of the specifics of the solar business. What created your interest in solar energy many years ago?
Well, I came to Humboldt State University to go to school for environmental science. And about 2 weeks after I got here, I got a job with a solar company. So that's kind of all she wrote, I guess. I've been doing solar ever since. I have a background in heating and air conditioning, so I kind of had some of the basic tool skills, you know, that applied pretty well to solar.
Were you able to take coursework at HSU in solar?
Yep, I took coursework at both College of the Redwoods and also HSU, and I actually now teach a solar hot water design and installation course at College of the Redwoods.
And one of the reasons we wanted to have you on, Ben, is that you're one of the people that's actually in the field trying to implement these grand visions of renewable energy futures for Humboldt County, and you're intimately familiar with some of the challenges and navigational roadblocks that that vision poses to Humboldt County. So what are your thoughts about how the effort to try to make Humboldt energy independent? What are your thoughts about that?
Yeah, it's a lot of work. You know, obviously the sun isn't always out, the wind's not always blowing, and, you know, just trying to figure out how we can meet that with biomass potentially, with waves, you know, all these things need to be integrated into the grid. And that was the purpose of the smart meter, was to be able to integrate all these different technologies.
And it seems like there's a lot of structural challenges too. Obviously, the major interest for a lot of homeowners, as I'm sure you're well aware, that people get really interested in the idea and then they start talking about the cost and all of a sudden they're less interested. But working with a partner, you've come up with a really novel way to address that big financial challenge for people. Can you just briefly tell us what that is?
It's a solar leasing program. So instead of buying the panels, you actually lease them for 20 years. So you don't have to come up necessarily with the whole upfront cost. There are some zero down options as well as some other options that are available as far as partial down and then a complete prepaid option also.
Ben, maybe you could even talk a little bit about your business and what kind of things you do, but regarding the leasing program and solar installations, maybe you could walk through the process for our listeners so they would know what they would be getting into if they were to engage you.
Yeah, there are a bunch of steps. Obviously, a site visit is the first, and I'm going to come out and make sure that you have a decent site for the solar energy, and that's typically 10 a.m. to 2 p.m., and that's kind of your peak sun hours, and that's kind of the minimum that we want.
What are we looking for in a good solar site? What kind of things do we need?
Well, obviously, the south-facing roof would be optimal. We can work with west-facing roofs also, and southeast is okay, east being not really preferable, and obviously north, unless you're in the other hemisphere, is not a good option. So that's typically what we're looking for, and obviously, a decent roof itself, the roof needs replacing. I usually recommend that you replace the roof before you go ahead and put solar on. So those are kind of the biggest two things, the structure to put it on. Certainly putting it on the ground is also an option.
Not physically on the ground, but hanging on a pole or something.
Not physically on the ground.
Put it on the ground, kids. Here you go. Watch out for the panels.
So typically you put it on a pole or you put it on a rack, a ground-mounted rack.
Okay.
So those are kind of some of the options. But you obviously need more, a little more space, and it costs a little bit more money to do that because you're typically, you know, having to do some excavation as far as digging holes and putting concrete in holes and then trenching to put the conduit in. So typically that's a more expensive option, but for some people who don't have the right orientation of the roof or they have shading, that's a good option to deal with.
And it seems like solar has gone through a cultural shift in the last 20, 30 years. It's been an evolution away from, say, the back to the land hippie folks. And now it's obviously gone really mainstream. It's all over the place in commercial buildings and sunnier areas in California and Arizona. And the homeowners are now, through the leasing program and others, are suddenly able to see it, you know, on roofs throughout most of the western United States, at least.
Yep, that's true. It's certainly coming mainstream, and certainly the technology's gotten a lot better. We're getting away from batteries. A lot of people seem to still think that we need to have batteries to have the solar, but the grid ties, when it's sunny, you're producing extra, and when it's cloudy, you're using your credit, and you're using PG&E as your battery bank. And it also means when the power goes out that you also lose your power, too.
And one of the cultural shifts that I've noticed, Ben, is solar panels, I think, by many people were thought as kind of unsightly and unattractive to be on a building. And now it's kind of a sign of that you're with it almost.
Right, it's a status symbol. Yeah.
It's like bling for the house. House bling.
Yeah, and I think it can look nice. I try to always keep them flat to the roof.
Right.
Instead of making your house look like some crazy spaceship, you know, I see it sometimes kicked up all over the place. And I really try to avoid that at all costs if I can, because we're trying to make it acceptable. And if it looks really funny, then it's not.
You said spaceship, which triggered for me, of course, one of the earliest uses of solar panels was in the space program.
That's right. That's right.
And your calculators.
That's where a lot of this stuff comes from, is from NASA.
So not only did NASA bring us Tang, they also brought us solar panels.
That's right.
Hey, Ben, you kind of went quickly through it. I'm not sure all of our listeners got the difference between the grid tie and the battery powered. I know that that's kind of a confusing idea, but the whole net metering, maybe you could talk about that a little bit.
Okay, so off-grid, you know, you have your panels, and your panels go to the batteries, and you can store that for later use. And then you're pulling out of the batteries and going through an inverter.
And by grid, we mean the power supply that we all count on, PG&E. So
all the power
lines. You are energy independent when you're off-grid.
Right, so off-grid, you wouldn't have PG&E at all.
You're energy independent.
You would not be connected to PG&E.
But for those of us in a rural or suburban setting, that may not be feasible.
Yeah, I mean, I've had some clients who want to disconnect from PG&E even though they're on the grid, which to me doesn't make much sense. And there is another option of actually doing a grid tie with a battery backup.
Mm-hmm.
So that's also an option. So again, if we're strictly doing grid tie, there's no batteries involved. So it's going from the panels to the inverter, and the inverter is changing it from DC electricity to AC electricity like we use in your home.
Mm-hmm.
And again, if you're in the house using it, then it's going to go right in and be used directly. And if you're not home, if you're at work, then it's going to go and spin the meter backwards.
Mm-hmm.
And you're going to get a credit. So if you start producing in June and then you come to the next time in June, PG&E does what's called a true-up period, where they come and they see how much you've used and how much you've produced, and hopefully it's equal.
And so how is the solar business these days?
It's doing really well with panel prices coming down. It certainly helped business. The rebates are also coming down a little bit. But the idea was with the rebate program was that the rebate would come down over time and panel prices would come down over time and it would all work out. So that's kind of been the idea. Unfortunately, it's still too much money for somebody to come up with. If you're talking $15,000 to $20,000 upfront cost, it's really difficult. And that's where the leasing program really comes in, because the idea is that you're making the same payment as you would to PG&E, and you're able to lock that rate in so it doesn't escalate, or it escalates lower than what PG&E's rates would be. And by the end of the lease, you will have saved at least $5,000, typically.
And for those listeners who might want a little bit more information on that, don't you have something coming up soon, workshop?
Yep, next Wednesday at Arcata Technology Center at 6:30. We'll be having a lease presentation. So if homeowners would like to get more information on the leasing program, it's free to the public. And it's going to, I think, 6:30 to 8, I believe, is what the time is.
And how can people get more information online?
They can go to Planet Green, HumboldtPlanetGreen.org.
HumboldtPlanetGreen.org, okay.
Yeah, or SchofieldSolar.com. And it'll also be in the journal under workshop.
Great.
This week.
Well, we want your business to do well, but of course we can't be just plugging Schofield Solar here. So let's back out of the leasing program and your business for a second. We'll go back and take a more broad-based view of the solar industry and what it's facing now. So the one thing that it seems like has happened with a lot of industries is the early subsidies, as you mentioned, lead to eventually more mainstreaming, and then eventually prices on technologies tend to go down over time. What has driven the price of solar to really an all-time low? What's been the driver of that?
Well, Chinese modules.
Manufacturing in China?
Yeah, matter of fact, there's a lot of government subsidies in China that have kind of helped bring that cost down. And a lot of American companies have actually been struggling to compete with that currently, stay alive. So that's been, you know, the biggest thing in why panel prices have gone down. Certainly, we're selling a lot more of them, too. So economies of scale kind of helps to bring that cost down, too. So.
And I'm sure you have an opinion about the Solyndra company in Fremont or whatever. I'm sure that is aware of that. What exactly happened there? It was such a buzz of interest and activity.
Yeah, it's a thin film technology, and it just couldn't compete with crystalline panels. I mean, the price of crystalline panels come down, and in some cases, it's almost getting closer to $1 per watt. And the Solyndra was $4 a watt. So a lot of these thin film technologies that aren't crystalline based just can't compete. So that's what happened. That's why it all kind of crashed, was that they just couldn't compete on the market. There was just no way. So it's kind of unfortunate that happened. But there is a lot of companies. Unisolar is one of them also. That just they just can't compete anymore. You know, and Unisolar was one of the companies that did the thin film that would roll out under the roof that looked like the roofing. So it's really crystalline is the solar panels that we kind of know as solar panels now. You know, that's kind of what we're seeing.
Ben, you've been for some time now working around residential and commercial facilities, and you know as well as anybody how building is a system. It's got all sorts of different parts and energy flows and material cycling and whatever. What other aspects of the home are important to consider when you're doing solar? I know that in terms of economic analysis, that often the efficiency improvements and you know other types of energy conservation per se are more cost effective. What kind of other considerations do you ask a homeowner to think about when you're doing a solar installation? Can you talk about that a little?
Well, solar hot water is certainly something to consider. You know, leave room on the roof for that, or are you interested in that? You know, I think a lot of people have been talking about electric vehicles, so potentially sizing for that or leaving room or in anticipating coming back and doing stuff like that. Yeah, as you're saying, certainly any energy efficiency type thing that you can do, you know, as far as lighting, insulation, anything you can do to bring your energy use down is a good thing. There's been a lot of people that have been against smart meters, but I think in a way it's a good thing because you can get online and see what your usage is, and you may decide not to do a certain thing based on being able to see what's going on real time online. So I think there certainly is some advantages to the smart meter, even though they're kind of getting a bad rap. Another note on smart meters, you know, they actually at this point don't work for solar. They're not bi-directional. So as I'm installing solar systems, they're actually pulling the smart meters off.
Is that right?
Coming back and putting a digital bi-directional meter on, which
wow.
I always get a kick out of.
They're not that smart then.
I was going to say, the unidirectional meters aren't smart.
Yeah. So the smart meter, I think it's just a programming thing. But, you know, that would be a question for a PG&E representative. But as far as I'm aware, they just sense power going through it. So if you weren't home and it was a nice sunny day and you had your smart meter on there and you didn't change it out, it would just be sensing production.
Well, right.
You should be getting charged for your solar that you were putting onto the grid.
Yeah. So, you know, with all of the nefarious conspiracy theories that came out of the smart meter thing, that the big missing piece of all of this is that they didn't plan for solar to produce back to the grid. That seems unbelievable to me.
Yeah, I think a lot of it was just timeline. I think they were, the CPUC required them to give them a deadline to have it all done, and they just got it done.
Yeah, got to get her done.
I don't think there was necessarily very good planning. Because, I mean, the whole, one of the purposes of the smart meters was to be able to integrate all these different things into the grid.
Yeah.
So, unfortunately, we've kind of fallen short of that a little bit.
Yeah, that's too bad. Well, another thing that you mentioned briefly, solar thermal. So, let's make the distinction here. There's solar photovoltaic, and then there's solar thermal. And kind of describe for us the difference.
Okay, solar thermal or solar hot water is also known. You typically have a storage tank that's next to your existing water heater. Then you have copper pipes that run up to the roof to copper plates that are on the roof. And there's typically a heat exchanger inside that solar storage tank with some type of heat transfer medium in there. Propylene glycol is one, or it could be water. And it transfers the heat from the solar collectors on the roof to the tank. So photovoltaic is actually producing electricity. So you're heating water with the solar thermal, and you're producing electricity with the photovoltaic. So that's kind of the distinction between the two. And there are actually rebates and tax credits available for both.
Do you find that clients are confused about the two, and do you have to convince them possibly?
Yeah, I really come across a lot of people who think that the solar hot water is the old technology and the photovoltaic is the new technology.
Huh.
When in actual reality,
it's the other way around.
All the bad solar hot water systems that were around back in the 80s have gone away, and the ones that were kind of tried and true are continuing to be produced, and I'm still installing those systems.
Well, in addition to this, the roof-mounted and home-installed solar thermal, there's also the large-scale solar thermals that are used to produce steam-powered turbines on large desert arrays. Those are solar thermal as well, correct?
Yes, those are typically solar thermal. Yep. So that's another way to do that. And that, sometimes that's done with salt, with molten salt, so it can actually have storage.
Okay.
and be able to use that salt to run a turbine later on. So a lot of the issues with that type of solar thermal is just it's out in the desert where they don't have any water, and they got these mirrors that they need to clean.
Yeah.
So some of these technologies, they run into trouble with just the whole cleaning aspect of it. So that's not something you're really going to see up here in Humboldt County, because we don't have enough sun to make
right.
that stuff work. There's quite a bit to all that stuff, and most of those systems are tracking systems too, which
mm-hmm.
you know, most of the systems that I'm installing are just fixed. They're not something that's tracking.
So the sun is, of course, when we're talking about solar energy, we're talking about nuclear power, of course, because it's a large fusion reactor in the sky. But the sun, really, I mean, if we design around the sun, we have not just the potential for solar thermal and photovoltaics, but we have the passive solar aspects as well, even here in Humboldt County.
Yeah, certainly. I know Larry Schuessler at SunProst, he's got a whole bulletin board that he shows sometimes of buildings with no windows on the south side. And it amazes me all the time, you know, just driving around, seeing places that there's no windows on the south side.
Right, yeah.
At all. Not even thinking about passive solar. And even some new homes that go up now, there's still not even any thought as to the orientation of the house and the window placement. Passive solar is interesting in the fact that when you look at most books, there's kind of the textbook passive solar, which in a lot of ways doesn't work here in Humboldt County, depending on where you are, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
If you're out in Willow Creek, a lot of those design principles do work. But if you're in Eureka, you don't want to have long overhangs
right.
to block out from the sun. You're trying to get as much as you can, typically. So passive solar is something that we need to be considering more so.
One of the difficulties with our housing stock in Humboldt County is that vast majority of Humboldt County's housing stock is 30 years old or older. So you're going to be adding value or adding a cost that goes onto a home. And the value of the home may already have peaked out, especially if we've seen the last 4 or 5 years with the prices in real estate nationally and certainly in this region declining pretty substantially. So when people make an investment like this, they're obviously not necessarily thinking they're going to be in their home for 30 years, but that payback on the original purchase of a solar panel system could take 7 to 10 years, if not longer. So back to the leasing program, the benefit of the leasing program, obviously, is that you substitute a lease payment for a utility payment.
Yeah, that's correct. And you can, if you're going to sell your house, as long as the new homeowner's credit score is 700 or better, you can just transfer that right over. Or you can buy the system outright, include that in the cost
of the home.
So you're not stuck with it. You're not saying, oh, well, I'm making this investment and I'm going to move in 5 years. It doesn't really matter anymore. There's ways to make that work.
Right. So first of all, you have to decide if you want to accept their lowball offer, and then you have to see if they're valid, and then you have to check their credit score to see if they can accept your solar system.
Right.
So that's a high bar to get for selling a house.
And that's the best way to do it, obviously, because you're just paying the lease payment rather than paying for your big PG&E bill. So hopefully if they're buying a house, you would think that their credit score would be good enough for them to get the loan in the first place. So hopefully it's just an easy transfer, which I think it will be.
Well, and one thing that it really occurred to me that the leasing program provides is a really clear mechanism to enable us to get closer to, say, Germany, that has solar panels on large, vast numbers of residences throughout the country. And Germany's climate is very similar to Humboldt County's in a lot of ways.
Yeah, it is. And I point that out to people all the time. They're like, oh, you're doing solar in Humboldt. And I say, well, most of Germany has about the same sun as we do, and they got a lot of solar going on there.
And so what's the driver? So there's obviously an economic incentive system in Germany that doesn't exist here yet. But there seems to be other drivers to what has happened in Germany that's made solar such a normal part of building a house.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's really just people's attitude. And their energy costs are a lot higher, and in a lot of ways they're getting paid more for their production. So I think that's what's driving all that. And I think a lot of it's energy costs for them. Their energy costs are a lot higher, so they're thinking more along those lines. Their energy is pretty cheap here.
Well, and I think as in a country like Germany that's largely urbanized with some rural outreaches, of course, but largely it's an urban-based population, people don't want a new coal-fired or nuclear power plant built anywhere near their town. So with solar panels on a lot of roofs of buildings there, they can obviously reduce the amount of energy they need to produce through new generation. So they can use the distributed energy model that we talk about being solar panels on roofs or on buildings of existing structures rather than brand new power plants.
It's offsetting the demand to fire up a plant in the middle of the day.
Right.
So when we have air conditioning loads going on in places that need air conditioning, like Reading or down the Bay Area, that's the time that we're hopefully going to be producing more than we need and able to offset that. So for a lot of these power plants to have to fire up these plants just to meet peak demand in the middle of the day, that takes a lot of effort on their part, and it's not very efficient. So I think that's really where the solar can come in and kind of offset that. So PG&E should be welcoming people doing grid ties, you know, to offset that, because it makes it, I think, easier for them as far as maintenance-wise, I would think.
Say, Ben,
yeah.
Your company, Scurfield Solar, and we've been talking a lot about solar, but you're not completely all about that. What other things do you do?
Yeah, I do a lot of stuff. I actually have a plumbing license and a heating license. And, you know, as I was mentioning earlier, you know, I have a background in heating and air conditioning and went to school for that back on the East Coast. You know, we don't have many trade schools here on the West Coast, and or not that I'm aware of, but back on the East Coast, you can choose to go to high school or you can go to trade high school. In the trade high school, you have a week of shop and a week of academic. It's a model that it would be good to see out here because there's so many kids that don't necessarily want to go to college. And you can see the climbing debt of people going to college and then still not being able to find a job. Trades are important. It's not seen as an important thing, but plumbers, electricians, solar people, tradespeople in general are pretty important.
So I saw a term, green plumbing. Could you explain green plumbing?
Yeah, green plumbing is just using water and using energy more efficiently. So certainly high-efficiency water heating. There are condensing-type water heaters out there, tankless as well as tank-type heaters. So that'd be one example of green plumbing.
And a tankless heater just heats the water right when you need it.
Instantaneously, yeah. And it heats it instantaneously. It's not, people think that it's on demand, it's going to come out of the tap and it's going to be hot, but very often it takes a little bit longer because you have to wait for the blower motor to go on, you're going to wait for the burner to come on, you're going to wait for the water to get in one side of the coil and out the other side. So it sometimes can take a little bit longer. I've been installing a lot of recirculation pumps where you push a button and it turns on the pump and circulates it through the water heater and back around in a circle. So then when you turn on the tap, you have hot water. So instead of waiting for a minute for your hot water, you're going to wait for 2 seconds. So I've been installing a lot of those, you know, around the county, and that's certainly a lot of people are concerned about water usage, and certainly we seem to be blessed right now with lots of water, but in the future we are going to see periods of drought where we're going to be trying to conserve more water. So there's a lot of customers that are already kind of on that page. Rainwater catchment is another thing, you're catching rainwater off your roof.
We don't have any rain here. What are you talking about?
Right. And gray water, too. There's some pretty simple systems you can do right off your washing machine that use gray water. It's just a three-way valve right where the hose normally goes into the downspout. You either turn it to irrigate your fruit trees, or you turn it the other way and it goes down the drain. So these are the types of things that we're talking about when we're talking green plumbing. You know, it's just using water and energy to heat water more efficiently. So solar hot water plays into that, into green plumbing, too. So, yeah, so I think it's a good thing. And there is a whole green plumbers organization out there, too. So that's something that people could look up online if you're interested. But, yeah, there's a whole organization now that's dedicated to that. So we're starting to see throughout the trades, the kind of greening of the trades. My mechanical contractor magazine, for instance, a couple of years ago, you wouldn't see any solar, any kind of high-efficiency type thing. Now it's every other page is something to do with solar or ground source heat pump or something to do with efficiency, rainwater catchment. I mean, now these magazines, it's becoming mainstream now. It's not just something for earthy, crunchy people in Humboldt. So it really is. There's been a shift, certainly within the building trades industry.
And so I always wonder about big mainstream cultural shifts like this. And so for me, I always wonder if it's a generational thing. So one generation gets out of power, a new generation behind them comes into power, and suddenly the old ideas that were dismissed are now embraced. And I've certainly seen that with solar, and I'm sure you have too. What do you think the next trend is with solar? Where do you think this industry is headed?
That's a good question. I think we're going to see more inverters. That's what changes the DC electricity to AC electricity, embedded in the solar panel itself.
What will that do?
Well, it makes the labor costs come down even more because you're not having to hook up a separate inverter to the panel. Also, for firefighting, it makes good sense because right now what happens typically is you have your panels on the roof. There's a conduit that comes down to a disconnect, and then it goes to your inverter. So that line is live all the way from your solar panels all the way down to the disconnect. So from a firefighter's perspective, they show up and there's a fire during the middle of the day and they try to chop into that conduit. It's live.
It is electricity.
It is electricity, and the thing that is confusing to a firefighter is you turn off the breaker, and with normal house electricity, you turn off the breaker, and it's off.
Right.
But if the sun is out, there's no way to shut them off unless you throw something
on top of the panels quick.
Right. So with AC modules, as they call them, with the inverter embedded into the module, when you turn off the breaker down at the breaker box, the power is off all the way up to the panel.
Ah.
And typically now we're wiring all the panels together in series, so we could have up to 600 volts DC. Now that's a lot of voltage right there.
It'll knock you out.
With AC modules, each module is its own thing. It's its own kind of self-contained unit.
Mm-hmm.
And the advantage of that also is you can come back and you can add more modules at a different time. And I should clarify what AC means. That means alternating current.
And DC is direct current.
In direct current.
Not a band from Australia.
Yeah.
What about AC/DC?
Right. I should clarify that because, you know, to me it's just everyday terminology, but to someone listening it may not be, it may be confusing. So that's where I think we're headed, is towards having the inverter embedded in the module itself. So I think that's where we're headed, and I think that's a good thing. I think it's a good thing to have it hooked up like that. As I said, it makes it a lot easier to come back after the fact and add more panels. Typically with inverters now, they're wired in strings. So you wire 7 together, and you might be able to wire anywhere from 6 to 9 of them together on that particular inverter. So you're kind of locked in. You're up, mm-hmm. up to 9, you can't add 10 because you have to change the inverter. With the inverter embedded in the module, you know, it doesn't matter. You're just coming out another panel because it's just its own separate thing. Another advantage of that is each module, you're able to monitor that separately.
Remotely.
So if you had a bad cell or you had a problem with the module, you'd be able to see it right away.
And you'd be able to do that remotely.
You'd be able to do that remotely. So a lot of the stuff is online there. You can pull it up. You can even have it come up to your iPhone and look at it and see what your production is. It'll even tell you if there's a problem. It'll send you a notice saying, hey, you got a problem with module number 6. So those are some of, I think, where we're headed and some of the advantages.
Okay. Well, I read last week that the last nuclear reactor in Japan that was operating after the Fukushima disaster was finally turned off last week. So Japan is now pursuing a course of energy production that does not involve nuclear in its future, to which I say that's great, but there's a huge gap in their energy production and their energy needs. And of course, they're probably going to go to use coal right away because that's the short-term gap. You know, Japan, what would Japan do right now with a solar-focused energy production? What do you think?
Well, it's hard to kind of ramp all this stuff up. I mean, certainly solar is one. Wave power is another one, but that's kind of still experimental. Wind power is another one. But again, all this stuff is intermittent, so I guess it's not so easy to figure out what it is. I think what we need to do is just be relying less on just one thing, on nuclear, and that's it. We need to be maybe relying on a little bit of coal, a little bit of nuclear, a little bit of natural gas, hopefully wave power, wind power, and hopefully, you know, as we develop these new technologies, we'll be able to get away from some of these old dirty fuels and nuclear power. I'm hoping that we can move away from that. But I think in the short term, that's not gonna happen.
Yeah, it seems like
you're gonna have to go to coal.
Seems like a big challenge to drop everything and switch automatically over to solar. Well, I want to thank you for joining us today. We're talking about the solar leasing program with Ben Skirfield. Ben, how can people find out more information about the solar leasing program?
Skirfieldsolar.com or humboldtplanetgreen.org.
Okay.
That's information on the upcoming workshop next week. Yeah, next week on Wednesday, 6:30.
What day is that? Wednesday the...
Yeah, Wednesday.
We're all looking at our calendars. Wednesday the 16th at 6:30?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, well, thanks very much for joining us today.
Thank you, Ben.
All right. Well, thanks, guys.
All right.
You've been listening to the EcoNews Report. I'm your host, David Narum of Greenway Partners, here in the studio with Kurt Cohoon of Greenway Partners. Joining us today via phone was Ben Skirfield of Skirfield Solar, talking about the solar leasing program and an upcoming workshop next week.
If you have any questions or comments about this program, please call our listener comment line at 826-6089. You can hear this broadcast again at the KHSU website under archived programs at khsu.org. The EcoNews Report is produced for KHSU, located at Humboldt State University, in cooperation with the North Coast Environmental Center. Join us again next Thursday at 1:30 here on KHSU and KHSR for the EcoNews Report.